Hey, I'd like to discuss a topic which, believe it or not, is in the parsha. And we'll try to finish it up today, so next week maybe we can start talking about Hanukkah topics. That'll become timely. But as you know, so in this week's parsha there is a story which the Rambam actually takes up in Mishneh Torah. It's rare to find a Rambam in Mishneh Torah explaining what a story is in Chumash, explaining what's going on in Pesukim and Chumash. That's really as far as the narrative is concerned. But that's what we do find in this week's parasha, that we find the striking incident of Shimon and Levi going into Shechem and basically executing the populace in response to their attack on Dina. And the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim in Perek Tes Halacha Yudalad understands this to be a reflection of the mitzvah of Din. So just before we see the Rambam, we'll just see the Gemara. The Gemara says in the Sefer Sanhedrin and Afnan Vav Man Aleph that, as we are aware, so there are 613 mitzvahs which were addressed to Am Yisrael, but beyond that, to all of humanity, there are 7 mitzvahs. And those mitzvahs are, for the most part, Yisurim. 6 of them are prohibitions, and one of them is positive. So the Gemara says over here, this top line over here in number 1, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sheva mitzvahs nistavu b'nei Noach. There are 7 commandments that were given to b'nei Noach. Dinin u'brechas Hashem, dinin, which we'll define, brechas Hashem, blasphemy, avodah zarah, idolatry, gilui arayos, immorality, shvichas damim, murder, gezel, theft, ve'eber menachai, and eating from a non-shechted animal. And the Gemara goes on to try to figure out the different sources from Pesukim, where we learn these prohibitions from. The Gemara refers to the pasuk and trying to figure out, we're not going to read all the Gemara inside, but referring to the commandment of Din, so the Gemara refers to the pasuk of Vayitzav Elohim Esa Adam, and there are 2 opinions in the Gemara, whether Din is understood from the word Vayitzav, or whether Din is understood from the word Elohim. And coming off of this mitzvah of din, so the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, in Parak Tesi Dalas, this is a source, I guess number 2, it's right there in the middle of the page. So the Rambam explains, V'keitzad mitzuv v'heim ala dinin, what does this mean when we say that there is a commandment to society to incorporate din? So the Rambam writes, Chayavim lahoshiv dayanin v'shoftim v'chol plach v'plach, there is an obligation to install judges and police officers, to put the judiciary and an enforcement system b'chol plach v'plach in every section, l'adun b'sheish mitzvah zeilu, to adjudicate the other 6 mitzvahs. That the other 6 mitzvahs are all prohibitions, and then there's 1 positive commandment to place a court system in order to enforce this. U'lahazir asam, and also to warn people about it. U'ben noach sh'avar lachas mishav mitzvah li har b'saif, and a ben Noach who violates one of these 7 mitzvos is subject to execution by saif, by a sword. And it's for this reason that all of the townspeople in Shechem were chayiv misa. Shehare Shechem gazel, because here we see Shechem stole and did other things inappropriate. And they were aware of it. They were harboring the town was harboring this criminal, and they did not deal with him. And therefore they are guilty of that. They're guilty of neglecting the responsibility of din. And then he goes on to say, Ben Noach, then he goes on to the details of Halacha Ben Noach, Nerek Beit Echa, you only need 1 witness, V'dayin Echa, you need 1 judge, B'lo Hasra, you don't need the formal Hasra system that we have in a Bezdin, that we'll discuss later. The Alfi Krovin and relatives are also qualified to testify. B'lo Beis Isha, B'lo Tod Nishalhem, but a woman is still disqualified for Edus and for Dayanus. So Rambam basically suggests that what happened in this story is that Shimon and Levi were punishing the neglect of the mitzvah of din. That's one of the Sheva mitzvah of Noach, and all of the Sheva mitzvah of Noach have a rule that goes with them of Azharas and Zohi Misasan, that there is a Chiyuv Misa for violating any of the Sheva mitzvahs of Noach, and therefore the entire city of Shechem not only the criminals themselves, but the entire city that was neglectful in prosecuting and taking care of this, they all incurred a death penalty. The Ramban in Chumash, the Ramban in this week's parasha, disagrees. The Ramban in his normal commentary on Chumash, I think he quotes the Rambam, let's see where it picks up from, he quotes the Rambam verbatim, and then he adds, let's see, where should take it from? Yeah, it's the first cut, the first paragraph over there, so it's about four lines from the bottom.
Over here?
She says, "Ein dvarim halal nechonim be'enai." I don't think the Rambam is correct. I don't think the Rambam is reading the story right, because first of all, the Rambam seems to be assuming that what Rabbi Shimon and Levi did was appropriate. And we find that Yaakov was harshly critical of them. So Ramban comments, "Shim Cain Hoya, Shim Cain, if he was right, Haya Yaakov Avinu Chayav Lios Kodim Azochem Yisasam, then Yaakov would have done it himself. The Impachar Mehem, and let's say he was too scared to do it himself, so Lama Kos Albanav, so still he shouldn't have gotten upset at them, he should have respected what they did. Lama Kos Albanav Arapam, why did he curse them afterward? In Parshas Vayechi, we see that he curses them for this. So therefore, let's skip a little bit. So then you see the last word over there on that second to last line. The Aldati, and according to me, what does this mitzvah mean? Aldati hadin shemonu v'noach shem mitzvah shlehem. According to me, the mitzvah of din, that is according to Noach, is einam l'hoshiv dayanim b'chol plach plach bilvad, is not only to set up a court system. About Siva Osam Bedine Geneva, the Ona, the Oshek, Vishkar Sacher, Bedine Ashomrim, the Onis, Mefata, the Avas Nazikin, Vichov, the Chavera, Bedine Mal Velo, Bedine Mekka Memchar, Vichos of Him. But basically, what he just did was he just detailed all the sections of Choshen Mishpat, all the different areas of monetary law, theft, and of monetary oppression, you know, overcharging, and not paying your workers, and rules of watching property, all of these things, and damaging property, all of these principles, the Ramban says, that we normally associate with Choshen Mishpat, but basically Ramban says all of these laws apply to Ben Noach as well. That's what Din means. Din is basically telling us that Choshen Mishpat is a universal code. It's applicable not only to Jewish society, but it's applicable to all of society as a whole. So basically, to summarize, the dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban here is that according to, the dispute exists on a couple levels. The first of all, the Rambam believes that the purpose of Din is primarily a court system to impose punishment for a lack of keeping to the other six principles. And the presumption then would be that monetary law, in the Rambam's view, would basically be logical, would be rational. Whatever seems to be fair in society is dealing with monetary law, civil law, that would be the responsibility of general society to enforce. While according to the Ramban, the mitzvah is not only setting up a court system, but din really means that the entire body of Choshen Mishpat that we have is applicable to all of society. And then, it's going to take a long time to read everything inside, so I'll just say outside, the Ramban then goes on to say that he doesn't, as he already indicated, he doesn't think that the Rambam's reading of the psukim of the story is correct, that really Shimon and Levi were not justified in killing all these people. And that's why Yaakov got upset. So why were they not justified? Because he writes that even if the Rambam is correct, that's the main focus of Din, setting up a court system to enforce the other six mitzvos, still you can't get punished for not doing that. Punishment that we have of Azaras and Zoyim Misas and the punishment we have of Achiv Misa for all the seven mitzvos is really only by the six mitzvos, is really only by the prohibitions. Same way we find in the halachas of Yisrael, that we have punishments for negative commandments. But for not fulfilling a positive commandment, there's not going to be a punishment for that. So that has to do with how he deals with the narrative. But what emerges here, probably the most pressing point that emerges on a practical level, is that the Ramban basically believes that all civil Jewish law, all Choshen Mishpat applies to all of humanity. While the Rambam would not necessarily say that's true. The Rambam would apply only, perhaps, normal, rational law to society, and the mitzvah of din to enforce it.
Hi. Perhaps to me it would be the punishment. If you do something monetarily incorrect, it would be killed.
According to the Rambam.
According to the Rambam.
Anyway, according to the Rambam, right. Well, so sorry. According to, well, you have to put two together, because according to, well, something active, monetarily incorrect. Right, that could be. Well, even maybe not, well, right. According to Ramban, if you use something active that's under the category of din, right, it could be. We're going to discuss a little bit, some of the nafkaminas. The Chasam Sofer points out that he feels it's not such a large nafkamina, because basically, according to the Rambam, most of the things that we prohibit that's included in this whole long list will somehow become redefined as being part of Gezel. And basically, these things all tell you what monetary property is, and if you violate these laws, so you'll probably run afoul of Gezel. That's what the Chasam Sofer suggests. Could be there are differences. But the Tshuvas do suggest that the prohibition of Gezel for Ben Noach does become more inclusive. The Hisarius Tshuva points out that it should include perhaps Gnevas Das, right? Deception, which is usually verbal, but gains you. Gnevas Das, it's a complicated term to define. We normally understand Gnevas Das means that basically you are machzik tov v'chinam. You get somebody to think you have done them a favor when you haven't really done them anything. So you say something that creates some type of a debt in somebody else's mind. You make somebody think that they owe you a favor and they don't really. That's what we call Gnevas Das. So the Hisarius Tshuva writes that should be included as well in the prohibition of Gezel. Mechas Chinuch points out Lo Sachmot is also going to be included in this. So there are a number of branches to Gezel which could be included. So the Chasam Sofer felt that overall maybe there isn't such an afkamina. We'll see that there might be still a lot of different points that might emerge. The Rama and this Tshuva here, which Chaim so beautifully tasted here, so I feel bad not reading the whole thing inside, but you can take it home and read it because it's interesting. He talks about a question, Halacha Lamaisa, of Din that would apply to Bnei Noach. So he goes through these different studs and he goes through the different possibilities. He happens to favor the Ramban's position. He does believe that civil law of Choshen Mishpat extends to all of humanity. And he suggests that the Machlokas might be a Machlokas in the Gemara. That when the Gemara has a dispute as to where to learn the mitzvah of din from, Vayitzav or Elokim, so he suggests that might be relevant, that the word Vayitzav might be a general commandment to make laws, and that if you believe that that's the source for mitzvahs of Bnei Noach, so then maybe that's what the Rambam is saying, there's just a mitzvah to have a normal civil system, whatever you come up with, that's fair. Why, if you believe the source is Elokim, so Elokim in its chol sense, in the Chumash, Elohim, is used to refer to Dayanim, is used to refer to Jewish Dayanim, to the system of Choshen Mishpat put into practice. So maybe that's a code word or a word that's meant to signify, again, Jewish Choshen Mishpat, but applicable to all of society. That's how the Rama suggests. And if you want to take a look, it's quite an important tshuva on this matter. Other issues of the story also play a role. For example, Shimon and Levi didn't only kill everybody, they also took all their money. So what was the hetter to do that? What was the permission to take all the money? So the Or HaChaim and others suggest that there is a knas involved. When somebody is attacked the way Dina was, so the Torah prescribes that there's a monetary fine as well. So therefore Shimon and Levi were not only executing them, they were also collecting money as a fine, as a knas. And that poses a question. That normally we assume in halacha that you cannot pay both a knas and pay with your life. That normally if you are executed or if you're punished in any bodily way, you are exempt from monetary retribution because we have a principle called kim lib d'rabmine, that we only assign to a defendant, we only give a punishment that is the most severe punishment. If somebody incurs two punishments at once through one crime, we only give the most severe punishment. So somebody who gets executed, he doesn't have to pay as well. It's not always such a relief. But if you're getting a harsher punishment, or even if you're getting just Malkus, you don't have to pay a punishment also. You don't have to pay a penalty also. So why should Shechem have to pay a fine, the city of Shechem, why should they have to pay a fine if they're getting executed at the same time? Don't we apply Kim Leib D'Rabmine? So the Chasam Sofer suggests in his Tshuvas that that should be dependent on the Rambam and the Ramban. That if you believe that civil law is defined by the Rambam's terms, basically rational, so Kim Leib D'Rabmine is not something you would make up on your own. Kim Leib D'Rabmine is something the Gemara gets from a pasuk of Kidei Rishaso, Risha Achas Atamachayevu, Vietamachayevu, Shtei Rishos, that basically there is a pasuk telling us that there is a concept of Kim Leib D'Rabmine. It's not a logical concept. So if you're saying that civil law is defined by logical standards, the Kim Leib D'Rabmine would not necessarily be a part of that.
Why can't you say that there are two punishments, one for not having the civil court system, that's why they killed him, and the second one is for...
You're saying it's for two different crimes?
Yes.
That might be a different answer. Yeah, that's also... well, it would be an answer for the populace. But for the individuals who committed the crime, it wouldn't be such an answer. If you're saying for the money of the populace, it would be that really it's not two punishments for one crime, it's two punishments for two separate crimes. Sounds like a reasonable point. But this issue, by the way, of Kimura Mine by Bnei Noach happens to be Machlokas Rashi and Tosus and Erevin and Nefsamach Bezim and Aleph. And the Chasam Sofer suggests that it should be dependent on this question. Do we believe that din is Jewish din, applicable to all society, in which case it would take with it some of the details, such as Kim Lev Duran Mine? Or do we believe that it's more rational based, in which case there's no reason to assume that a special Chiddush HaTorah like Kimle Ramine would be extended to it as well? Everyone following more or less? Okay, there's also, and just to deal with more points of the story that affect the concept, so what about the women? So the women of Shechem, of the city of Shechem, were not executed. So why not? So Meshech Chachma suggests, well, that's based on the Rambam again. The Rambam says that a woman is not chayiv in the mitzvah of din. So, therefore, they don't bear the responsibility for not having carried out the mitzvah of din. However, Achronim ask, why should we not say that if the Rambam's whole idea is that they're supposed to appoint judges, that's mitzvah of din, so still, shouldn't the women be held responsible for not having appointed judges, for not having put into place a system that would have had somebody take care of it? That's how some Achronim ask. So, a couple of ways to deal with that. On the one hand, you could say that there is no such obligation, and there's no obligation that you can only fulfill through a representative. That if a mitzvah has to be done through a shliach, then you can't hold somebody responsible for that. Either you're able to do it yourself and with a shliach, or you're not obligated to do it at all. So that's one. There's one view in Achronim like that in general, that if you're going to say that women should be held responsible for appointing somebody else to do it, that's not a logical concept. Same question comes up by mezuzah. For example, women have to have a mezuzah on their doors, so it's a question in halacha whether or not women are kosher for putting a mezuzah up on the door. And many achronim point out that it doesn't make sense to say that they have an obligation that they can only do through a shliach. That if there's an obligation to have a mezuzah, so it must be, isn't it, that women are also kosher to put it up. It doesn't make sense to say that women are chayiv to have a mezuzah, and yet they have to ask somebody else to do it. That's not a logical premise. Rav Shach, the Chacham Livracha, is quoted as suggesting that maybe the reason is the reason we have to say that the women are not held responsible for appointing someone else. Yeah, so that's the question in the Gemara, how you view the role of a Kohen. It's a Chakir in the Gemara in Kedushin and the Darm. So we say, Kane Shluch the Rachman Didan or Shluch the Didan. That's something you could ask that by anybody. You could ask that by Yisrael, unless you assume that the role of a Jew in bringing a carbon is not to actually do the hakrava. The role is to bring it from his mamon, and how exactly the Kohen plays a role. So that's what the Gemara's Chakir is. In any case, the whole, either way, even if you say Kohenim or Shluchim of individuals, still, the Achronim point out it's a whole different concept of shlichus. It's just had to do with that's where the roles are defined, and it's not the normal principle of shluch hashlad and kamosim, which Bar Avraham points out. It's a different concept. Rav Dvar sounds like that. It's a different type of concept. So Rav Shach suggests that the reason we don't hold the women responsible for not appointing dayanim is that really the chiyuv, according to Rambam, is not really appointing the dayanim. Yes, he says that you have to put dayanim into place, but really that's just in order to keep things more organized. That really the obligation of din is on every individual, and in order to have it and done in an orderly, organized way, so they would appoint official sitting judges to carry it out. But really, the mitzvah is on each and every individual by himself. So therefore, it's really an individual mitzvah, and women are patur from it, and that's why we don't hold them responsible for any lack in this case. It does seem indicated, whether you say like the Rambam or like the Ramban, whether you believe that the system looks completely different than the Jewish system, or even if you say it looks pretty much the same, still, it does seem indicated that there is a big difference in theory. And this is something that the Ran comments on in his drushes, and others spell out in later generations, that when we deal with din in a Bez Din context, so there is an aspect of Kedusha to that, there is an aspect of mitzvah, it's somewhat of a ritualized process, and it follows certain rules which are really kind of mitzvah dictated. But when we're dealing with a secular court, when we're dealing with a court of Bnei Noach, even if the rules are basically the same, the rules of all the things that the Ramban set out are basically the same, still the function is different. And this is something that the Meiri explains to the Sanhedrin, that the function of a secular court, really according to everybody probably, is just to keep the world going. It's just to keep the world from descending into chaos. And you need to have a system of enforcement and a system of regulation in order to make sure that happens. And even if the Ramban is correct and it ends up looking like Jewish law, still, in its basic essence, it does have that difference. And that's why even the Ramban will agree that there are certain differences, such as how many witnesses you need, and how many judges you need, and how exactly the court is set up. And that's because a lot of the details that we have in the Sanhedrin, the exact details of Eidos, very often transcend the need for ascertaining the truth. You can ascertain the truth sometimes without having all the details of Hilchos Eidos, but as din is a mitzvah, so it has certain requirements, the same way all mitzvahs have certain requirements. But when we're dealing with a secular court, so the din doesn't take the role of a mitzvah in that sense, it takes much more of a practically oriented role. And therefore, you can have these different details, which the Rambam talks about, of one witness, and the witness can be related, and you can have one judge, and all of that, which even the Rambam would agree to as far as procedure. Those differences apply, probably because there is this thematic difference that we don't have the kedusha of din, we have a more functional purpose, and that's really what drives the secular bezin, and that is the secular court, and that can have some nafkaminas also. That might be why the punishment is saif, the execution is done with saif. According to one opinion in the Gemara, that's the most lenient execution. That's the most dispute of the Gemara, but according to one opinion, that's the most painless of all forms of execution. And Achronim explains, Sefer Ber Miriam explains, that we have no desire to inflict any more pain than necessary. Basically, we're not trying to affect the kapara here. We're not trying to bring about an atonement. We're trying to just keep society functioning. And therefore, whatever punishment will do that, whatever punishment will enforce the law, that's all that's necessary, and there's no need to look for a punishment that's any more severe than something that will basically keep society going. And also, as far as Hasra is concerned, so the Rambam writes that there isn't a need for Hasra. Now, Hasra that we have in a Sanhedrin, in the Jewish Sanhedrin, is really a highly ritualized process. That there has to be two kosher, non-related witnesses saying to a defendant, do you know that what you are doing is a crime that will get you the death penalty? And he has to say, yes, I know that, and still do it anyway. Now, that standard is going to be very hard to execute people with. Now, nonetheless, when it comes to a Jewish Beis Din, Sir Soloveitchik explained that the role of Hasra is really not just to ascertain that the person is guilty, but we find also a very extreme halacha. The Gemara says in Ksubis that there is a requirement that the Hasra be tochdei dibur, that the Hasra be within 3 to 9 seconds before the crime is committed. Otherwise, the Gemara seems to assume that we're going to be afraid that he may have forgotten. Now, is that really a logical fear, to assume that if somebody commits a crime 30 seconds after being warned about it, that he really forgot? So Rav Soloveitchik explained that the role of Hasra is that in a Sanhedrin, we only execute somebody who is actively rebelling against the Kadosh Baruch Hu by thinking about the crime at the second that he's doing it. It's in his active consciousness. So anything less than that doesn't get you executed in Sanhedrin, at least under the normal system. So, but when we're dealing with the system of Bnei Noach, it's not so much that we're trying to punish somebody for rebelling against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, we are trying to keep society functioning, and the standards of evidence might therefore logically be a little bit less. The Chubas Nachman Chaim points out, however, that even though the standards of Hasra are less, still there is a basic responsibility for education. We're not going to be executing people for doing things wrong that they never knew were wrong. So therefore, you have to assume that if there's a mitzvah of din, that mitzvah would include also educating the populace as to what morality is all about, and to what mitzvahs are all about, what the Sheva Mitzvah Enoch are all about. And if the society isn't educated, then there's no reasonableness to assuming that there can be any punishment to that. So therefore, it must be assumed that included within the general imperative of din is a general mitzvah of education as well. But in any case, this whole punishment of Saif, this whole punishment of execution, seems very severe. To say that there's a punishment of execution for any violation of the Sheva Mitzvah Enoch, that seems kind of harsh. So that's a good question. How you deal with that? So some Achronim have different theories. The Tshuvas Chalkas Yaakov, actually the Tshuvas Chalkas Yov, was Yov of Kintz was a student of the Avnezer. So the Chalkas Yov, based on a kasha that he has, suggests that maybe the punishment of execution, at least as far as it pertains to mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveiro, let's say gezel, right? So strictly speaking, the Rambam writes that anyone should be, all bnei noach should be executed for theft. Now that's certainly not the practice. So how do you deal with that? So the Chalkas Yov suggests that this is true before there is a functioning court system and a functioning government. Once there's a functioning government, they can decide to give a lesser punishment for a theft or for something like that, because they can basically, by consensus, forgive the harsher punishment. Basically, if you have, for example, the United States government is in place, and they have decided that if you steal, you don't get executed, you go to jail, so that means that the populace of the United States has gotten together and basically been mochel on the punishments for the property that was stolen from them, at least in a general theory.
What about Israel?
So Israel functions under a different rule anyway, because Israel isn't subject to Dinim B'Nenoch, it's subject to Dinim of Yisrael. It is a big question, how do you deal with modern day society where you have kind of an in-between state, where you have a Jewish government that's not officially a Malchus, and not officially a, and certainly not B'nai Noach either. That's a big question, how you deal with that. The biggest problem, which is a lengthier discussion than we have time for now, but the biggest issue was the death penalty. How is the death penalty dealt with? In the early years of the state, in 50, 51, 52, the Knesset had many heated debates about this. And the chief rabbinate at the time, and later, many of the rabbinim who got involved in the discussion came out strongly feeling that there should not be a death penalty in Israel. Basically feeling that the only way they would be able to put a death penalty into effect is as a Sanhedrin. Not because you had to have all the rules of Sanhedrin necessarily. It could be the Sanhedrin had different ways of dealing with people who were a threat to society, even beyond the rules of Edus. Gemara does say, Bezin Makav Yonshin Shalom and Adin, Sanhedrin did have a different way of dealing with certain circumstances, but that only applied to the Sanhedrin. And to arrogate that role to oneself in modern society, so the Rambam felt we don't really have a right to do, and we risk coming into violation of the Din of Reticha, it would basically be murder. And the only justification would be protection of society. And the Rabbanim felt that nowadays we have a prison system. We have a way of life imprisonment. You can put somebody away forever and they're not going to be risking society's welfare. So therefore there isn't a justification to put that into play today. And they would not necessarily say the same about the United States. The United States could perhaps carry out executions because they were working under a system of B'nai Noach, which acknowledges death penalty, and then which is not necessarily to say that the United States has to execute people, but that the right to do it could still be understood under the context of din. The question is, how does it become a right and not an obligation? So the Chalkas Yov's theory is that the government has a right, at least let's say with theft, the government has a right to establish that there's a different understanding among the populace. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, had a more expansive theory, which he published in Beis Yitzchak a couple of years ago, where he basically suggested that this whole idea of Misa by Bnei Noach is not a requirement. No one means to say that the obligation is to impose execution, but that there is judicial discretion, that the judge has the right to impose whatever punishment he feels is necessary in order to keep society functioning, in order to make sure that society is protected. And that could include up to execution. That if the judge decides that's what has to be done, so that is legitimate. That halacha does recognize that, right? But it's not to say that that's the only way of dealing with it. It could be lesser ways of dealing with it, but that there is judicial discretion to go at least that far. There is a fascinating shot, we don't have so much more time. So just to mention one or two other points, there is a fascinating shaila that was discussed by the Tshuvas Lahoris Nassim, Rav Nassim Gestetner, and his Tshuvas, the Rav Ben Ebrak. So he dealt with the case of the following situation. There was a woman who was a survivor of the Holocaust, and she was receiving reparations from the German government. So she had an income that was coming from the German government. And her husband felt that he should have some say in how that money is spent also, because that money, he felt, should be considered to be joint marital funds. So this question was brought before Rav Nosson Gestetner, and he considered what exactly is the status of this money that was coming to her from the German government. So on the surface, it would seem that the closest halacha category for this money would be Dmei Chavala. That if I hurt somebody, I wound somebody in a way that has an effect on them, so I am obligated by halacha to pay for that. Now, does that extension apply, does that obligation extend to Bnei Noach as well? Let's say a non-Jew injures anyone. So is there an obligation to pay for that? So Rav Gestetner felt that that should be dependent, perhaps, on the Rambam, but it should work either way. That according to the Rambam, it does seem logical to pay for the loss that you caused somebody when you hurt them. And according to Ramban, Chavala is one of our dinim. Chavala is something that we have in our Choshen Mishpat. So therefore, either way, it would seem that there should be an obligation to pay for injuries. And if we classify this money as Dmei Chavala, so Dmei Chavala is a personal debt, the debt that goes directly to the woman, and that's not something that the husband really has a right to have any say over, al pi halacha. That Dmei Chavala is something that goes directly to the wife, and the husband does not have any formal access to. However, he points out that there is an additional wrinkle here, because the money is not being paid by the Chovlin. The people paying the funds are not the Nazis. The people paying the money is the German government that came up afterwards, so they're not the people who actually perpetrated this crime. So it's one thing to say that somebody who hurt somebody has to pay. But here we're talking about a government that came up later that was not involved in this damage, so maybe you should say that we can't classify this as chavala, we should classify it as a gift. Okay, it makes sense, it's logical on some level, we should classify it as really as some type of a gift, and therefore it would be subject to different rules. However, he points out that that's where the Rambam comes in. That the Rambam believes the mitzvah of din is not only on the criminal, but is also on the overall society to ensure that the society is being taken care of in a fair way, and therefore the German government of later generations, even though they themselves did not perpetrate the crime, but they have a mitzvah of din to make sure all the affairs are taken care of, and so therefore perhaps there is some type of a Dmei Chavala status to this money. It's not considered to be purely a gift, but it is a reflection of the injuries that were done to her, and therefore perhaps it makes sense to give this money a status of Dmei Chavala. So how much more time do we have? Another 5 minutes? Okay, so there are a couple of other interesting points to bring out here. One thing that's interesting to note is, so we also have a halacha of Hashavas Aveda. And Hashavas Aveda goes beyond basic obligations of, oh, you dropped your wallet, here it is, but there's all kinds of rules that are attached to it. There was a halacha of Simanim, that a person who comes to collect a lost object has to prove that it's his. There are all kinds of details how that's carried out. This is the second paragraph of Mitzvah. And that procedure is basically considered to be applicable, the responsibility of all the different details of Darshehu, of asking for Simanim and going to those lengths to, in order to return lost property, is really a interpersonal Jewish concept. It's not something that's necessary to be done for all society, because basically the responsibilities that extend to all society are reciprocal. That since no one is allowed to steal from anyone else, so therefore Jews are not allowed to steal from non-Jews, non-Jews are not allowed to steal from Jews, all the laws have to be reciprocal. But when it comes to extra responsibilities, such as going to great lengths to restore lost property, so since there isn't any obligation on the non-Jew to go do this, this is a special Jewish concept, so therefore this is a concept that also doesn't go the other way. It's basically an inter-Jewish concept. It's a concept that applies only to Jews. Now, you also find that some Achronim point out that there are details of this law, of Hashavas Aveda, that extend beyond normal monetary law. The basic responsibility to ask for evidence goes beyond the responsibility of basic monetary law. That normally, if somebody says to me, you have my watch, and I say, I don't know, maybe it's your watch, maybe it's not, because I don't know whose it is, I found it. So, al pi din, the person should have credibility, because he's sure it's his watch, and I'm not sure whose watch it is, I have no idea. So that's what we call bari v'shema. He knows that it's his watch, I don't know whose it is, I don't know that he's wrong, I don't dispute him. So, al pi halacha, he should have rights to it, without any other intervening evidence. So, the fact that I have to say, well, prove it, so that goes beyond the letter of the law. So some Achronim point out that that's how you know that this whole Hashavas Aved idea is not a Din Choshe Mishpat. It's not a normal civil law. It's a special mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that's a Jewish mitzvah. So it's just interesting to note. But it's not normal Choshe Mishpat, because normal rules of Choshe Mishpat would be that if you claim that something is yours and I don't know that you're wrong, so you should get it. And I shouldn't have to say, give me proof. So the fact that you have to bring these simonim, that shows that it goes beyond. Well, it's different. It's outside the code of Choshe Mishpat, but basically it's not a, it's basically, it's like a Yoredei type of thing. It's a mitzvah. It has nothing to do with monetary law. It looks like it has to do with monetary law, but it's not. It involves property, so you might think it's a monetary concept, but it's not. Where else do you find that? You also find that by ribbis. That there is a prohibition to collect interest. And this is a prohibition also that only applies to Jews. It's a question why that is. It's a topic of a longer discussion. So ribbis actually... Right, ribbis is a big question, whether that's a monetary law or whether it's more of a Yoredei Dika law. And it happens to be that ribbis is actually in Yoredei. Hashem Zaveda, I think, is in Choshe Mishpat. But that's a minority view in Achronim to explain why that is. But by ribbis, so ribbis is a big discussion in Achronim, whether ribbis is a monetary concept or a Yoredei type of concept. So it's just interesting to note that you have two areas of halacha that look like monetary law, i.e. ribbis and Hashavas Aveda, and both of them you have theories in Achronim who posit that they're not really monetary law. They look like monetary law, but they're really Yoredei type of law. And these are two issues which look like monetary law but only apply to Jews. So I was thinking this might be a support for the Ramban's position, the Ramban's contention that rules of civil law, Choshe Mishpat, apply equally to Jews and to non-Jews, might be supported a little bit by this point, because here you see that anything that looks like monetary law but doesn't apply to non-Jews, i.e. Hashavas Aveda and Ribbis, all of a sudden you have Achronim saying, well, that's not really Choshe Mishpat. So maybe that idea is a little bit support for Ramban's idea that anything that is Choshe Mishpat would by definition be universal. And the fact that it's not universal is maybe an indication that it's also not really part of Choshe Mishpat. So just maybe close on one other point. So there's, just to give another example of a possible difference between the Rambam and the Ramban, so there is a prohibition of gzeil, the prohibition of theft, and the prohibition of gneva, and the Gemara says, lo signov, also is mentioned additional times in the Torah to tell us, lo signovu, to tell us, lo signov, even amanas lamekat, that you shouldn't steal, even as a joke. That you see somebody's soda on the table and you take it away as a practical joke, so they'll come back and they won't know where it is, and they'll get annoyed, and then you'll put it back. So the Gemara says that's also called Gneva. That's also prohibited. So does that prohibition also apply to Bnei Noach? So if you believe like the Ramban, so it's in Choshe Mishpat, there's also a rule of not even stealing as a practical joke. But let's say you believe like the Rambam. So the Achronim explained that why is Lo Signov Amanas Lameikah prohibited? Why is it prohibited to steal for a practical joke? Because in addition to stealing to get money, there's also a problem in stealing in that you hurt somebody, you annoy somebody who can't find their property. So even though here you're not going to take their money because you give it back to them, but they're still annoyed, that's why it's still prohibited. So if that's the reason, so basically we're dealing here with a prohibition that's not really monetarily based, it's not really theft. So if that's true, so according to the Rambam, perhaps that shouldn't extend to non-Jews as well. They shouldn't have a prohibition of stealing for a practical joke because it's not one of Shev Mitzvah Noach. But if you believe like the Ramban, so it's more of a concept that's already in Choshe Mishpat, so even though it's not something you necessarily would have come onto on your own, but it's part of the code that's there, so that extends as well. All right, so I think we're about out of time. Maybe next week we'll start with Hanukkah topics. Next week's already the last Tuesday before Hanukkah, or there's another one? Either way, we can start with Hanukkah. Okay.